Hello, welcome to Season 12, Episode 18 of the Ubuntu Podcast. Hello, my name's Alan, and we're going to talk about tech gadgets, and we'll have some command line love and some listener feedback. With me today is Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Alan. I'm still here.
Good. And Martin, how are you?
Hello. All good.
Super. What are you up to this week, Martin?
Well, recently I have been making Ubuntu Mate images for the Raspberry Pi, specifically the Raspberry Pi 4.
Ooh. Huh. What, 2004?
Yes.
Bit late. Come on, chop chop. That was months ago.
Well, 2004 was, but, you know, we've been... The enablement of the Raspberry Pi 4 has been somewhat, delayed by, you know, the enablement that the Pi Foundation are doing. And we've been catching up with that. And we've been delivering those updates in 2004. And we want to deliver an Ubuntu desktop for the Raspberry Pi in 2010. And in order to get there, I thought what would be good is if we pump out some images from a community project that build on that work to get some feedback early. So by the time 2010 comes round, we can be sure we've, you know, covered all of their bases and made sure everything's working well.
Is this your YouTube channel based popular thing called Desktopify?
Yes, that's grown a life of its own.
So this was a shonky shell script that you wrote that turns a basic Ubuntu server image or something into a desktop image, right?
Yeah. So there are Ubuntu 2004 server images for the Raspberry Pi, either 32-bit or 64-bit ARM images. And I wrote, as you correctly point out, a shonky shell script that if you've installed one of those server images, turns it into a full desktop. And then I adapted that shonky shell script into a new shonky shell script that creates an actual image. So you can just put that image on an SD card, boot your Raspberry Pi, and you go directly into a graphical experience.
Nice.
And this is like a proof of concept for where we want to get to with Ubuntu desktop proper by October. And we've had some fabulous feedback, and it's been extremely helpful in fleshing that out.
I notice some popular people on the YouTubes have been picking up on your work here. And I think I saw ETA Prime. Did he do a video on it? And Quids Up did videos, multiple videos about this kind of stuff. It's nice seeing the stuff you've done on your little, your tiny, tiny, tiny little YouTube channel getting visibility outside your world. Isn't it weird?
My little den in YouTube, which is my channel, it is good to see because, as you point out, yes, there are big channels like ETA Prime who kind of specializes in SBC related gadgets. You know, every day there is a very interesting revelation on his channel. He has everybody that's in the SBC arena sending him equipment, and you see all sorts of interesting gaming gadgets. And the fact he picked up on my nonsense is remarkable. And also thanks to another YouTube channel, Lee PSP Video, who ETA Prime follows. Lee PSP Video, if you're into Raspberry Pi, it's a channel you want to follow because every day, couple of videos on interesting stuff on the Pi. So I've kind of entered that world. And then, as you say, Quids Up is doing a week-long can you use the Raspberry Pi as a desktop replacement operating system.
Nice.
And those efforts around Ubuntu are featured in that as well. So it's all good stuff.
Cool. Nice. All right, let's crack on with it. So this week is a slow news day. Let's talk about our favourite gadgets. We had a thought where, you know, we're all nerds and we like to buy hardware and software and we like to play with stuff. And we thought we'd have a conversation about some of the things that, like, we really feel like Marie Kondo, like we really need to have in our lives, and we really enjoy. And we thought we'd have a little chat about that. And afterwards, if you feel like sending us some feedback, telling us about the gadgets or software or things that bring you joy, that spark joy with you, feel free to send us some feedback, because we'd love to read that on a future episode.
Please do that. We would love to hear the things that bring you joy.
So my favourite gadget that has been helping keep me sane recently is Ewan the Dream Sheep.
The what?
What?
Ewan the Dream Sheep.
Is this a sheep joke?
No, this is a thing you can buy.
You need to use more words than just keep saying Ewan the Dream Sheep.
Ewan is a stuffed sheep with a little speaker inside and some nice soothing red lights.
Do you have difficulty getting to sleep at night, Mark?
What you do with Ewan is you put him in your baby's cot.
Oh, it's for the baby. I get it. All right.
Ah.
And when you put your baby down to sleep, you turn him on and he plays a variety of noises. So there's some music and there's some heartbeat sounds for when the baby's newly born and used to hearing its mother's heartbeat. And there's white noise, which is the one that we've plumped for. And also, yeah, soothing red light. And you press a button and it goes on for 20 minutes, within which time hopefully your baby is asleep. And it helps soothe them and settle them. And without it, we'd be a bit lost, because by this point, it is absolutely my daughter's favourite thing. She cuddles up to it all night, even after it's turned off.
Oh. And is it actually in the cot, and like she can hold on to it and like you say, cuddle it?
So the general advice for safe sleeping these days is that you don't actually like put soft toys in your baby's cot with them, just in case they, you know, stuff their face into them or something silly like that. So it actually has a Velcro strap, which is its tail, which is really strong Velcro. So you can strap that to the edge of the cot and then it's sort of dangling inside and they can get it and touch it and it's really nice and soft, but they can't, you know, lay with it over their
pull
face.
Pull it towards them or anything. Yeah. Right.
So it's not just that this sheep makes a nice noise, is that it's a tactile object that they're attracted to.
Yeah. Okay. And it's extremely cute. You can also get a Ewan the Dream Sheep Deluxe, which has a motion sensor.
Is it IoT enabled?
No, fortunately not. But no, it'll listen if your baby starts crying in the night and then turn itself on, so you don't have to keep on going in and pressing the button.
Now, you see, we had, when Sophie was born, so this is like 16, 17 years ago, we had a similar thing that had, it wasn't Velcro, it had rubber straps that you would put over the side of the cot, and you could go in, and similarly, you could just bash this button, and it would produce some light and play some songs, and after a while, the kid figures out how to get another hit by pressing the button or sliding the slider or whatever. And we'd be laying in our bedroom in the next room and everything will go quiet and we think, oh yeah, yeah, she's gone to sleep. Yeah, yeah, we'll get some sleep now. And then you hear the song just start playing again and again and again, all the way through until about 3 a.m. and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to hear this song ever again. So look forward to that, Mark.
Yeah, I would just like to add to that. Outside my office that I'm sat in right now is a box of toys from when Agatha was very small. And in it is a super annoying giraffe, which has a hair trigger on its activation switch. And if I breeze past it at anything approaching half a mile an hour, this little voice goes off. Hey, I am a giraffe. So, you know, what is cute and adorable now, Mark, will haunt you for years, I can assure you.
Yeah, we found the thing in the loft and it still had power in the batteries. Amazing. And got it out and just like flicked the switch and the music started playing. And we were getting like Vietnam style flashbacks to when Sophie was a baby. It's like, oh no, make it stop, make it stop.
It's remarkable that these baby toys have battery endurance that lasts decades. And yet my laptop is exhausted in 45 minutes.
Oh dear. Yes. So how often are you changing the batteries in this thing then, Mark?
They last probably about a month.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
A month worth of nights. Yeah, it's pretty good. It takes, I think, 3 AA batteries.
Does it do the old slow down, like...
Yeah. it gets a bit creepy because, yeah, you normally get like a nice sort of soft and like soft bit of white noise just going shh. And then, yeah, towards the end, it starts going...
That's a creepy.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, a bit excellent. Like something out of a horror movie towards the end.
What a great gadget. Martin, what about yours? What's your gadget or thing that's your favourite at the moment?
Well, I could pick lots of, like, hardware gadgets, right? As we record this, you can see over my shoulder, and there are some behind me, including, you know, voice-activated lighting. But right now, my favourite gadget is a bit of software, and I love it to pieces, and it's OBS Studio.
Oh,
so as we mentioned earlier, I've been recording some videos on a little known YouTube channel, and OBS Studio is at the heart of that. And it is a properly amazing bit of software and by far my favorite gadget because this reason alone. You know how we talk about the application gap in Linux and mm-hmm. we talk about we don't have Microsoft Office or we don't have the Adobe Creative Suite, insert name of massively popular mainstream software. Well, when it comes to live streaming, OBS is the de facto standard. And guess what? We have it too. And also all the plugins. So there is Streamlabs OBS and there is OBS Live from Streamlabs Elements that use all of these browser features or browser source plugins to sort of enrich that capability. But with OBS Studio on Linux, we have browser sources available and we are at the cutting edge of what's happening in live stream software, and we are not disadvantaged in any way whatsoever. So right now, my favorite gadget is OBS Studio.
So I know you've spent a lot of time on two things, really. One is making sure OBS on Linux works really well. And I know you've contributed a lot to the snap of OBS to make sure that it itself works really well and does video encoding reliably and fast and offloads it to the GPU and all that. And actually, interestingly, just today, I got pinged by someone who said, do you know who looks after the OBS snap? And I said, well, mostly me and Martin. And he went, ah, brilliant. And he asked me how you get AMD VA API working on it. And I said, I'm pretty sure that works. Just go to the advanced tab.
Yep.
And he went, oh, yes, you're right. There it is. And all of that stuff that just works baked in where you can do NVIDIA encoding, Intel VA API and AMD VA API, all of that. But then there's the flip side, like there's the building the software, but you've done a lot of work on setting up your environment and having all the software set up. And I've even been roped out of bed at near midnight here and come up here because you've asked me to demo because you wanted to demo at me what OBS streaming looks like. Oh, let me show you this transition. Let me show you that transition. I actually got out of bed and put some clothes on so I could come and sit here so that you could demo the stuff you've done with all these scenes and transitions and stuff. It's pretty impressive stuff what you can do with OBS.
It is. And also, two things. First of all, thank you for getting up at midnight. And thank you for putting some clothes on and sparing me.
I mean, I didn't have to have my webcam on, but I did. Like.
But yes, I mean, it just doesn't matter, right? OBS is OBS. And it's a remarkable bit of software. And for all of the little things that I've done to kind of improve it, the OBS Studio snap, I think, has around 18, 19 plugins baked in, which if you go onto YouTube and you research, like, how do you do OBS really well, regardless of platform, these are the, like, 20 plugins that everyone's talking about, and they're baked into the Linux version because it's just OBS. And there are very few things that you can't do with OBS on Linux that everyone else on, well, not so much Mac because nobody's doing that on Mac because it's atrocious. But, you know, on Linux for the game streamers, if you look at what the, in air quotes, pro game streamers are doing with OBS, there is nothing that you can't do on Linux that those guys are doing right now on Windows. It's fabulous. And it's the new best bit of software that is a total leveler for our community. So right now, without a doubt, my absolute favorite gadget. I love it.
Excellent. So I went with the traditional nerd hardware.
ThinkPad?
Well, you'd be forgiven for thinking ThinkPad. And that does play a part. It's close, but not quite. So I thought, what is it that I use a lot, that I've used for a long time, that I really love, that I really want to keep? And the answer is keyboards. Mm-hmm. It turns out that this keyboard that I'm sat in front of right now, that I use on a daily basis, which is my IBM Model M clacky keyboard, I've had since 1993, the same keyboard, and I've been using it, not daily because I've chopped and changed around various keyboards, but this single keyboard sat in front of me I've had for a very long time, since 93, which is not bad going for a piece of tech that survived all that long, right? Now, it's PS2 connectivity because it came with an IBM PS2 Model 50Z that I bought back then. And I've had to put a USB adapter on it, but I now use it on a ThinkPad every day, and I absolutely love it.
So you saying PS2 absolutely triggers me. I'm specking up a new PC to build, like from scratch, in 2020. And the thing that I am absolutely staggered by is a feature of all of the motherboards that are in my pick list is a PS2 connector. And I don't understand how that has manifested itself as a desirable feature of motherboards in this decade. I mean, I can understand it from our past. It was a useful capability, but they are sacrificing USB ports on modern day motherboards for having PS2 connectors. And is there a resurgence in grey-haired PC builders like us that is so significant that they have to incorporate PS2 connectors in motherboards?
I find that surprising.
Yeah.
Really surprising.
Right.
Because nobody has a PS2 mouse port. It's only a... I mean, if anything, it's only the keyboard. Mm. So, this is the primary keyboard that I use, and it's a full-on, full-size IBM Model M, proper IBM Model M. Very heavy, coily cable, beige colored, two-tone beige keys, right? I love it to bits. But on another day, I might be using an IBM ThinkPad keyboard. Right. So I have external USB ThinkPad keyboards.
Is this just like you've chopped off the bottom of the ThinkPad and put a USB cable on it?
That's basically what they are. You can buy them. They are effectively the same keyboard you would get on a ThinkPad X220. Uh-huh. You can buy those. And then later, they did a slightly shorter depth version, which didn't have a long wrist rest, which has the X230 keyboard. With danger of venturing into ThinkPad corner here, I'm sorry.
ThinkPad cul-de-sac.
But I also recently this week received another keyboard, which I'm so excited about. It's called a Tex Shinobi. And if you follow me on Twitter, you'll have seen the photos. And it's a mechanical keyboard, which has the nipple in the middle of it and three mouse buttons. And it's a glorious, glorious keyboard. It plugs in via USB Type-C, but you can also buy an optional Bluetooth kit that you can plug in the back of the keyboard so you can make it Bluetooth. But it is just the most glorious keyboard, and it has the layout of the X220, so the traditional old ThinkPad 7-row keyboard with a big fat enter key. You even get an alternate enter key in the kit. You get a blue enter key if you really fancy a blue ThinkPad enter key. Oh, it's just amazing. So I've realized, without realizing it until I thought about this topic, I'm actually a bit of a keyboard nerd, and I didn't realize it, but I'm only an IBM keyboard nerd. I'm not a big fan of all these like Cherry MX, whatever color. I don't care about that. It's just IBM ThinkPads and IBM Model Ms. That's what I love.
There are so many things I want to talk about that. I mean, first of all, I love a good keyboard, but I like the modern day implementations, even though I have a 1997. It's an IBM TrackPoint keyboard, reduced size with
the 3200.
Right.
Yes,
yeah.
Another one. Yeah.
And I still, you know, get it out and use it. Although I do have a USB adapter, and
but it's a US layout though, isn't it? It's
no, mine layout. Is a UK layout because bought it back in 1994 when these things were in good supply and you could, you know, do those things. It's remarkable to me that there is enough of an audience of like keyboard aficionados to actually service that market.
So there's a subreddit called R Mechanical Keyboards, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of people who just post photos of their mechanical keyboards. Many of them are the very lean, only four rows, 10 keyless, no legends on the keys.
So the 60%.
Yes, or like 40%.
Yeah, I've never understood that.
No, I haven't either.
I like a nice big keyboard with a number pad. Yes. And yeah.
Yes. So there are people who post those, but also there's a sticker you can get for the back of your car, which just says R/MK and a little picture of a keyboard. And people post photos of those that they see on the back of people's cars. Now, there's enough people who buy and build mechanical keyboards, not only to service a community of people taking photos of keyboards, but people taking photos of the backs of cars with a sticker of their affiliation with mechanical keyboards. It's mad, completely mad.
I approve of this, right? I mean, all three of us spend a lot of time typing at a keyboard every day for different reasons. And as far as I'm concerned, this is my Michaela drill. You know, it's the thing that I use every day. I want it to be the right height, the right angle.
Yeah.
The right key rest, everything about this is the thing that I interface with my computer with more than anything else. I want it to be right. And I'm prepared to spend more than $5 on the thing that I use to drive my computer, right?
That's the thing. The first time I bought a decent keyboard, you know, it went from spending literally, you know, 10 or 20 quid to spending over 100 quid. But I type so much all day, every day that actually, you know, it's like if you're going to buy a pair of boots, which you're going to walk around in the next 10 years.
Right.
It's worth spending the money.
Someone messaged me earlier on Telegram and I thought, I need to type a long reply. I know, I can go and use my ThinkPad keyboard. I actually was excited to type a reply to someone. So I'll put my phone down and I'll go and sit at the computer because then I'll feel much better typing on this keyboard. It's brilliant. Anyway. So I am interested to hear from other keyboard nerds, but also other baby-related activities, you know, things that you buy for your baby, or other interesting gadget software that you might have. So send us your feedback to show@ubuntupodcast.org. Next up, it's Command Line Love. I can't do that. And this one is, I think, a record-breaking Command Line Love. It's the longest Command Line Love I think we've ever done.
Technically, a command line, but I would say an actual program condensed into a command line. Right.
It is a script all bundled up into one line. It's very. I'm going to have to scroll horizontally to see the whole thing on our webpage, and you will have to do that too when you visit the Ubuntu Podcast website. So all this does is pipe a bunch of things together. And it starts with LSBLK, which lists block devices, and passes through a bit of grepping, and then it does a bit of while and loops through a bunch of stuff and uses a tool called system, what's it called? Smart CTL, which is the SmartMon tools package that contains the Smart CTL package, which gathers smart data from your hard drives. And the goal of this whole thing is to print out a list of all your hard drives that you've got and the number of hours that they've been powered on, because this is data that the drive knows. When it's powered on, it clocks up in the firmware how long it's been powered on. And so if you run this, let's say, for example, on a home server that's got a bunch of disks in, it will tell you a list of all the drives in your machine and how many hours they've been on. And so I ran it in one of my machines and it's 50,000 hours
that what?
Each of the drives has been on, which it says is 5.74 years. And there's four drives and all four of them have comparable times except for one, because one of them failed a while back and I pulled it out and had to rebuild the array and I put it back in again. And so it has slightly less on time than all of the others. And then the final one is an SSD. And so that, that has slightly less as well. I'm not quite sure why that is, but it's completely useless, but fascinating data anyway.
It's a great example of what you condense into a single line of bash if you really want to.
Yeah, it's great.
So thanks to Andy from bitfolk.com for providing that little bit. And if you're looking for a fine, fine VPS, then head to bitfolk.com.
We love getting your feedback. If you've got a comment about something you hear on the show, why don't you drop us an email on show@ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it's time for all your wonderful feedback. Corey Clinton emailed us.
Thanks for all your work. I love the show. In particular, however, I massively enjoyed the background bird song every time Martin spoke in episode 13. In your face, Joe Resington. I imagine that this was a background noise that Joe was unable to edit. Yes, it was. But this is clearly a feature, not a bug. It is a peaceful and relaxing, and I would argue that more podcasts and interviews in general should have birdsong.
Yeah.
I agree. It was a happy coincidence, definitely.
It makes a change from season one, where we recorded every interview outside a toilet. which is an interesting change. Ross McLean emailed us.
After the previous discussions about the chaos and carnage of the middle aisle in Lidl, slippers, computer monitors, etc., I thought you might like to know that my local store has decided to monopolise on this with a middle of Lidl advertising campaign. You can find the photo attached.
There's all manner of stuff in that photo.
I have to say, in the UK, Lidl is very strong on the puns.
Oh, really?
Like they've massively capitalised on the fact that Lidl sounds a bit like little. And also the rhyming with middle and various other things around the shop where they've the puns are strong with them, even though, you know, it's good to see like a company with a name that, you know, isn't native to the English language harnessing it to maximum effect.
Yeah, like all the other supermarkets that are native to the English language, like Tesco and Asda.
Asda Walmart. Sorry. Come on, get it right.
Kai Lyons emailed us.
This one is especially for Alan and Wimpy, with there now being 5 active remixes in development. And he goes on to cite Ubuntu Cinnamon, Ubuntu DDE, which is the Deepin variant, Ubuntu Lumina, Ubuntu Unity, and Ubuntu CDE. That means that if all 5 make it as official flavors, the amount of flavors almost doubles to 12. And his question is this: how do you think the new wave of remixes and their ideas will affect Ubuntu and the rest of the Linux community? So, my take on this is quite straightforward. I've been through this process, you know, long before I was hired by Canonical, I started a flavor. And I was therefore contributing to the corpus of software and the quality of Ubuntu desktop by wanting to be an official flavor. If we double the eyes of developers that are working on Ubuntu desktop software, even though you are not official, the de facto like Ubuntu experience, we are inviting people in that are committed to the Ubuntu ecosystem, have a difference of opinion about how we should present that, but improving it all the same. So I think Ubuntu will improve as a whole, as a result.
My take on this is I'm pretty certain that absolutely everyone involved in those five flavors is younger than myself and Martin, probably half both of our ages. And as such, I think this is fantastic right. to have new blood in the Ubuntu community, because there's a lot of greybeards, and I like the idea that there are young people coming into the community and bringing forward new ideas, new desktop environments, or new to us desktop environments, and new ways of thinking that, you know, maybe we're not at the forefront of our minds. So I think this is fantastic.
I agree entirely with that statement.
Someone on Patreon said,
I appreciate your honesty on the fact that you can pay less than the £3 minimum, especially as I'm now being hit up for 25% VAT. Your podcast is one of the highlights of my week, so I hope you're able to keep the command line low.
Thank you, someone. Pluck emailed us.
I use Mint Mate based on Ubuntu, and the system monitor can be added to the panel to show processor memory and network, plus others. It's always there, and if things go off the rails, I can see it straight away. Included is a pic of my screen top. Is this something that we spoke about before?
I don't know, but I find it interesting. I found it interesting many years ago. I think Matthew Garrett tweeted about the hilarity of putting panel items on the screen that update on a regular basis, because it triggers the screen to redraw mm-hmm. and causes the CPU to never be able to go to sleep. Anything right. that draws on the screen on a regular basis makes it almost impossible for the CPU to go into power save mode, and as such consumes your battery more. So all the while you're watching the thing, it's like a watch pot. You're like, you're making it worse.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's true still.
It is.
It was that back then.
It's interesting, right? Because, you know, for some of us, we've been putting those notifications in our panels for years, and it's a replacement for the flishy, flashy light that used to show disk activity on the side of your PC, you know, or the turbo button or whatever it was, right? So it is a replacement for that, and I do use them. And that's because I'm old and I like to see that kind of activity reflected to me. But it's not just about like waking up the CPU anymore. It's about waking up the display. There's all sorts of clever innovations in the way the pixels in the display are updated based on where the activity is. So if, for example, you have a clock with the seconds reflected, each time the seconds ticks over, it wakes up the display to redraw the display, consuming more power, which is why those sorts of things are turned off by default, which is why also CPU monitors and other things are turned off by default, because they wake up the display, eat power, lower your power endurance. But it's all up to you as the user of the computer. What's more important to you, knowing that those things are happening or extending the life of your battery?
I suspect this was a response to the fact that we mentioned Bashtop recently. Yeah, so I suspect it's a response to that.
You could run Bashtop in like a drop-down terminal and therefore not wake up the display all the time. It's fine.
Christopher Patty emailed us.
On Linux desktop and niches, I think pretty much all Linux general purpose computers as we know them today will become niche devices. Companies like Apple and Microsoft know that and are evolving their platforms to be more like tablets. Most mere humans will use tablets and other mobile devices, and the idea of buying a piece of hardware that weighs several pounds and requires its own bag to lug around will be utterly foreign to them. And once that evolutionary change begins, Linux will no longer be a niche player and will in fact be the only show in town.
Hmm.
There's quite a switch up there in that statement. I think that there is a couple of things going on there. Yes, for most people, they will follow the mainstream. They will adopt tablets and other slimline devices because that's the very thing they need. But I also agree that the desktop Linux experience won't be niche. It will become mainstream because that's where the power users reside in the future.
Adrian Bill emailed,
I have a question for ThinkPad Corner.
I think Alan's saying, do it again.
No, that's fine.
Sorry, I was trying to read his emojis. I have a T470S with a dock, bottom mount, not Thunderbolt. The dock has two monitors attached, and I typically have the ThinkPad closed while it's docked. I have found that with several Linux distros, docking, redocking can be hit and miss without restarting. Either the laptop screen remains as extended and I can't see the panels, or the screen is still off. Have you ever experienced issues in Ubuntu, or do you know of any software or distro that behaves nicely with a dock?
That's an interesting question, Adrian. I use a dock all day, every day, mostly, and I'm using a similar dock on the bottom, not a USB or Thunderbolt dock, and I don't shut the laptop lid. I might give that a try because it turns out the GPU in my ThinkPad doesn't like running three displays. So I'm going to actually try running just two displays. I'm going to downsize to just two displays.
So just the external displays?
Yeah, two external displays. And by shutting the lid, I turn off the internal display. So I'm actually going to reproduce what Adrian has. Mine's a T450, a couple of years older. But I imagine I might experience similar kind of things. So I'm going to give that a go and see what happens. So watch this space for further news in ThinkPad Corner. All right. And that's the end of your feedback. And that's all for episode 18 of season 13 of Ubuntu Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, we'll have more community news, goings on, and maybe an event. Who knows? If you want to get in contact with us in between shows, you can jump on our Telegram channel, which is ubuntupodcast.org/telegram, or give us a shout on Twitter. Ubuntu Podcast is us over there. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.